Welcome to episode 4 of Confessions of a Casting Director, where you will hear advice, wisdom, and true stories from inside the audition room. I'm your podcast host, Jen Rudin. Today's guest is my very dear friend, Maddie Corman. Maddie began her career as a teenager, starring in after-school specials and the seminal 80s movies 7 Minutes in Heaven and Some Kind of Wonderful. A Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Barnard College, Maddie was a series regular on Mr. President, All-American Girl, and Almost There. Her many guest roles include all 3 Law & Orders, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Damages, Rescue Me, Smash, The Good Wife, Carrie Diaries, and she recurs on Younger and Madam Secretary. Maddie was selected to be a playwright in residence at New York Stage and Film, where she developed her first full-length play, Accidentally Brave. Daryl Roth produced the play in New York at her DR2 Theater, and the solo piece had a critically acclaimed run in New York City. Maddie was nominated for the Outer Critics Circle Award, and she won the Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best Solo Performance. Accidentally Brave will have its West Coast premiere in the fall, and you can download the audio version of the play at audible.com and just search for Maddie Corman. Right now, Maddie is Lady Aberlin to Tom Hanks' Mr. Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Please welcome Maddie Corman to the podcast. I am so excited to be chatting with my very dear friend Maddie Corman today, and it's hilarious that we've had to make a podcast interview appointment in order to catch up with each other, but here we are. It's 2019, and this is the world that we live in.
It's very 2019 of us to speak via doing a podcast.
Absolutely.
That's the way we speak to friends nowadays. It's do each other's podcasts.
It's true.
You
will have one soon, I'm sure. So, you know, I'm such a fan of yours, and we paralleled each other a little bit as child actors back in the 80s, but you, of course, were successful, and I was not successful. I worked a little bit, but I have to just tell you that the first time I discovered you was watching your after-school special, I Want to Go Home. And for me, I was filled with jealousy, longing, admiration, braiding my hair, wanting to be Laura Ingalls, Nancy Drew, Harriet the Spy, and be your best friend on that after school special. So I just wanted to bring it back to those years and talk a little bit about being child actors. And then, of course, we will talk about some of the other major incredible highlights of your career.
Well, thanks, Jen. Yeah, being a kid actor then was different, and certainly after school specials were kind of a big deal for me just because I loved watching them, because after school I'd usually have to watch, if I was allowed to watch TV, it would be my mom watching Donahue, which I loved, but you might hear my dog, but then once in a while, I feel like every couple of months they'd give us this treat of an after school special, which were these little movies, almost like mini movies, where kids were the focus rather than just being somebody's kid off to the side. And yes, I Want to Go Home was very dramatic. I was really shocked and delighted that I got the part. I think I played a kid. We were a brother and sister. Seth Green played my little brother, and our parents were going through this terrible divorce, and our mom kidnapped us from our dad. It was her time for custody, and she took us away, and we kept having to dye our hair different colors and wear different clothes and have different names, and yet somehow we didn't catch on that we were kidnapped. I don't know if we weren't that bright, but I remember there was a very dramatic scene where I'm sitting there and I take out a carton of milk and my picture is on it.
Oof.
Because back in those days, that was how they made it clear. They let it be known that someone was a missing child. They put pictures on the sides of milk cartons. So my kids, I don't think, know from milk cartons or after school specials. But
yes, this was long before the internet was developed, of course.
And oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you remember, I'm always so curious, you know, obviously in casting, there's so many highs and so many lows, and the same for actors. And the best part about being a casting director, I always feel, is when you can call the actor or the agent and tell them that they got the part. Do you remember that day when your agent or manager called you and said, Maddie, guess what? You got it. You got that after school special.
I do. I think in those days it was more my mom who would get the call and then tell me. And I don't know that I remember that one particularly. I remember being excited to get it, but I do have a really clear image still. And you know, because you knew me then, that my mom and I were super close, and she did pass away when I was 16. So some of these memories are super bittersweet, I guess is a word. But when I was really, this was even before that, I had been a kid just doing local shows, school shows, a little community theater, and I had an acting teacher who kind of fancied herself a manager and started to send me and a couple of her other students out, really only through backstage, like reading about. So basically I went to an open call for this show called 12 Dreams. It was a play, James Lapine's play at the Public Theater. And I didn't know anything about anything except that I wanted it. And I remember coming into the driveway and my mother being outside and her saying, "What would be the best Hanukkah present I could get you?" And I was like, she goes, "No, really, really." And I said, "Tickets to a show?" She said, "What if you got to the show?" And I started jumping up and down. And then she told me I got the part of the understudy. There were two girls and I was going to cover, and I did end up covering both of them, which was super, super exciting. And I got my equity card and I was just barely 13. So crazy to think. So I do remember those calls. And unfortunately, I also remember many, 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 many calls going, "They're going another way. It's not going to be you. You're still in the mix. Oh, you're not in the mix." I mean, they are. It's a really tough, it's a tough business for kids. And it's honestly still, when you really love it, it can still break your heart.
It can break your heart on, you know, casting too, when I don't get a job. I have to tell you, I was a terrible actor as a child, but I also couldn't handle the disappointment and the rejection.
I don't fully believe you because I've read for you as a casting director and you're not a terrible actor, but I do, and I coach now and I coach some, I have some students who are young. And I do think that it is unfortunately not just about being good. It is about caring enough to be passionate, but not being so incredibly fragile that you can get broken, because it's easy to break. It really is. And yeah. It is not about talent. It's not always about, it's not fair. It's all the things. And that's really rough for a young person, a child, and certainly, an adult, but really as a kid, to know your value and know your worth and not let it be determined by getting a job or not getting a job is really tricky, because there's so much excitement and delight when the job happens that it's hard to then go, "Well, who am I if the job doesn't happen?"
It's true. I used to lie awake at night and pray to God to give me the job. And then I would always laugh and think, like, why is God going to listen to me now when I'm asking for something that I want? You know, why should God be listening to me now? And it was those sort of those sleepless nights that made me think that I wanted to be on the other side of the table, as it were, because I just couldn't deal with the rejection. And I was sort of, unlike you, who's an incredible actress with a wide range, I was sort of a one-trick pony with my funny lines and all of that. But Maddie, the next time I really saw you was in those the trilogy of plays up at the American Jewish Theater, which was the 92nd Street Y. I had done my own after school special with Peter Smith. I had this huge crush on him, and he invited me to see him. Yeah, I mean, I really liked him, and I guess I went up to see him in the play. And I know you were in one with Nikki Strauss and John Sherman. Which one was that?
That was the Chopin Playoffs. That was the third part of the trilogy. And the second part of the trilogy was with Peter Smith. I actually played my same character at, I think, 13 and then 16. I was 16. So Peter played the role of Stanley as a 13-year-old, and then Nikki Strauss played that same guy, Stanley Rosen, as a 16-year-old.
Right.
And that was when I met Mark Sherman, who is our mutual friend.
Yes.
Because you're one of the the campers, I call them, right? Didn't you go to stage?
Oh, there? I went to stage door 82 to 87, and my best friends are still those friends from camp. And you never came to our camp, but it's almost like you were at stage door because you were from Irvington and knew Wendy and Cindy Pryor, and you know there was such.
I call myself stage door adjacent. Yeah. Because so many people think I went there, and I'm good friends to this day with so many people who went there. So I feel like I went there, but I didn't go there. I would have liked it, I think. First of all, what's better than a camp where you get to stay in a hotel?
dingy and musty that it was. As my father would just say, if they would just, you know, Camp Schmutz is what he called it. But of course, you know, it was expensive and it was dusty. But the truth is we all met each other. And those of us, we still have our stage door mafia today that, you know, we help each other get jobs. We recommend each other for things. There's a lot of pride from those years. But back in the 80s, it was so much more. It was not as like woo-woo as it is now. You know, Johnny Cryer went there and a lot of great people came from there, but it was a lot more modest, I think, in terms of, it was the camp that was advertised in the back of the New York Times Magazine. And lucky for me, you know, my parents had said, what would be the greatest thing for you to do this summer? And thankfully I said theater camp, and they said, great, well, we found one for you. My sister went to Jewish camp and she became a rabbi. So it was all kind of, wow, you know, predetermined early on. But Maddie, let's talk for a little bit about I have to ask you while we finish about being child actors, you know, it knowing what you know now and everything that you've been through between your mother's passing and the genesis of your play Accidentally Brave and all that you've been through in all these many years of auditions and acting, what do you wish you might be able to say if you could talk to your younger self who was auditioning back then at 16, 17? What would be some advice you would give your younger self that listeners can take with them into 2020?
Wow. Well, I guess I'd say to my younger self, it's going to be okay. It's going to be a bumpy ride, but it's going to be okay. And kind of like I said earlier, you are valuable with or without the job, with or without the applause, with or without the paycheck from a gig. Because honestly, the jobs I've gotten, and certainly the play that I wrote, came out of passion, not out of wanting it enough is not enough. But when it's delightful and easy is sometimes when the best work happens. So, I think that's what I would like to tell my younger self. And sometimes I have to tell my old middle-aged self that as well.
Yeah. I think that's good advice.
And just enjoy it. You know what? I think that I would tell my younger self, and again, my today self, to enjoy even the auditions. It's such a gift to get to act. It's so much fun. And sometimes the business part of that makes me forget that. I mean, how crazy is it that I still have the job in some ways that I was doing when I was a kid? It's really silly. And there's something playful about dressing up and pretending to be other people. And we get so serious about it sometimes. And I think that gets a lot of actors in trouble. And it is a business. You do have to take care of yourself. You have to be careful of being taken advantage of on every level. But also, we all started, I think everyone who's an actor, a writer, a casting director, most of the people in this business, and the reason I'm so drawn to people on all ends of this business is because we started out wanting to put on a show. Mm-hmm. And it's a little family and it's fun. And so even an audition where I don't get a job, I have to remember, and I try to remind people, that it's just an opportunity to do something that you love. And that's kind of great.
Jason Kravitz said one time, you know, actors just want to act. And I always find myself quoting him because it's true. You want to do the work and you want to, get a chance to perform. And so even an audition, I always say to people, is an opportunity to just get in there and do your work. And, you know, unfortunately, the pressure now with auditions is so much more intense between technology and self-tapes and all that stuff, which we don't need to spend time talking about. But still, at the end of the day, technology doesn't replace talent, and getting in the
room and getting able to perform is a good thing. But we have to speak about a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, because I obviously grew up watching Mr. Rogers as much as I watched Sesame Street and Little House on the Prairie, and you are Lady Aberlin, which...
No, can you believe it? I'm still kind of pinching myself.
That scene, so Andy and I went to a screening, and there you are with hi, Daniel, and we were just weeping in our seats with your beautiful scene and your song. And so, and we looked at each other holding hands, you know, with tears in our eyes because we've known you. But how did you get this plum part? I mean, I know A.V. Kaufman cast it, but I mean, what a role.
Yeah, but this is actually a great story for actors who are listening, because I'll tell you why. First of all, I think I'll start out by saying every time you audition for something, you're not necessarily just auditioning for that job. And this is the perfect example. So a year or two ago, I know actually exactly the date, or not the date, but I know the day. It was the day after the election, the last presidential election. It was a dark day in Manhattan, let's put it that way.
Yes.
I mean, really, people were crying on the train. It was a very strange time. I had had my own real trauma in the last couple of years. I had moved to the city. We'll get to that later. But I was doing a play at Lincoln Center, and we were all just in total shock. But I had an audition the day after, and I thought, well, I'll go. I mean, what am I not going to go? And it was for this beautiful movie called Can You Ever Forgive Me, directed by Mari Heller.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know her, but she was going to be in the room, and it was Jennifer Houston, the casting director, who I love, who, like you, has known me. I mean, you and I knew each other as kids, but she has known me as an actress forever, and she's been incredibly loyal, and I just love her as a person. She's also an amazing casting director. She's so good at what she does, so it's always fun to...
We like each other, and we're both blonde, you know, blonde Jens in casting. I oftentimes get her emails, and I say, I'm Jen Rudin, not Jen Houston. So anyway, so she was casting the movie, and you got to meet...
She was casting the movie. I went in to read for the part of Melissa McCarthy's friend/crush. It's a great part, and it was a very... and Mari and her producer were there, and Jen was there, and everybody was kind of shell-shocked. And then I did my reading, which I actually thought was pretty great, and they couldn't have been nicer, lovelier. We all kind of held each other. It was a room full of women the day after that election, which did not go the way I hoped or thought it was going to go. I said goodbye. I went and did my play. I never heard anything. I never heard, oh, it's... they loved you, but no, I just never heard anything. And I let it go and went on with my life. And I don't know, a year and a half or so later, I got an audition for the Mr. Rogers movie. I think at that point it was called the Untitled Mr. Rogers movie. And it was A.V. Kaufman casting. I was out at the beach at a friend's house, which happens always. Make a plan. You get a great
partner
and job. And I tried to push it to later. No, they can only see you at this time. The director's in town. I looked up the director. I go, oh, it's Marielle Heller. I wonder if she probably wouldn't remember me, but I had that. I'll never forget that day because it's kind of, where were you the day after? You know, it's kind of a big day. So I drop my kids at the apartment and I dash downtown to AV's office. I'm singing the song in my head on the way. I'm really not. I love singing, but I haven't sung on screen maybe ever, maybe an episode of a TV show one time. So I'm singing, I'm getting ready, and I know it's Tom Hanks, and I go in for the audition, and A.V. says, Maddie, this is Mari Heller, and I said, oh, we've met, I don't know if you remember me, but, and I was starting to tell the story, she goes, of course I remember you, why do you think you're here?
Oh, okay, great.
And I said, oh, and she said, as soon as I thought Lady Aberlin, I thought Maddie Corman.
Oh.
And so it's just such a nice, and then I got the part, which is great, but just a nice reminder to actors to do your work and keep going and plant your seeds, because you don't know who's remembering. And I've had so many times where I've not gotten a part and been told, oh, no, 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 they love you. They'll use you again and something else. And it doesn't happen. And you start to get kind of sad and bitter. And this was just a lovely surprise. And filming that movie was as delightful as you can imagine.
I mean, being a little girl watching Lady Aberlin, you know, could you ever have imagined that you would get to play her as a grown-up?
No. And when, you know, we shot in Pittsburgh at the actual studio where he shot, and they recreated the land of make-believe perfectly. I mean, they used the same crew, and they had puppeteers who had been there, and they recreated the puppets. Some of them were the original, some they recreated, but really to the paint color, everything. So when I first walked on, and again, not to keep hearkening back to my mother, but that was really powerful for me to walk onto that set and be in the land of make-believe that I had sat for so many years watching with my mom and my best friend Debbie. And you know, it was just, it was really incredible. And I didn't love Mr. Rogers. I love him now looking back, but I always loved the land of make-believe. That was my favorite part of that show.
Yeah.
So, I kind of still can't believe it. And it was great. And then you walk on and not only are you in the land of make-believe, there's Tom Hanks, who I also had never met in all my years of doing this crazy thing. And he is exactly, I'm really not always that nice. I don't think everything is great, I swear, but he is exactly what you would hope he would be. And the whole vibe on the movie was incredibly loving and great. And then there was a tragedy that happened. You know, one of the crew members actually died.
That's right.
And so I was supposed to film the day after that. So I did not, I had to go back to New York, and they kind of regrouped and decided, I didn't know I was ever going to film. And they had a meeting and talked about it and decided that that's what he would have wanted, and that Mr. Rogers in the spirit. Anyway, they took some time and kept going and dedicated the movie to him.
I was wondering who that dedication was. It's always great to see you when we see you, like if I see you on Younger with Grant Shaw, who's my good friend, you know, I'm like always happy to see you, Maddie, but that was a particularly,
oh, I get to play his wife.
Yeah. Which is, he's very sweet, but seeing you, Andy and I were just, you know, we were so, moved, and I didn't know how my husband would feel about Mr. Rogers, 'cause he's older than me. So Mr. Rogers doesn't mean the same thing to him as it means obviously to me and my sister, in the 1970s. And, you know, we were just bawling between that and Little Women. I've been a wreck, you know, at the movies last week.
Yeah, I was surprised. My kids, two out of three of my children have seen the movie. One has not seen it, but and really loved it. And I was kind of surprised because I didn't know how today's teenagers would react to Mr. Rogers, to the movie. It's a very, I think it's a beautiful film, and she takes Mr. Rogers' pace in a way. Mm-hmm. It's a very quiet, thoughtful, almost meditative piece of art. And I didn't know how my kids, who are used to watching YouTube and that kind of entertainment, would dig it, but they really did. So
good. Well, congratulations. I'm still keep some of my stuffed animals. So obviously seeing you sing with Daniel was just so tender and beautiful. But let's shift a little bit. And why don't you fill us in on what's happening, with your one woman show? I know it's an audio book as well now?
I mean, for those of you that don't know, I had a really, my family went through something pretty crazy, mostly horrible. Mm-hmm. And about now, I'd say 4.5 years ago, I was living in Westchester with my three children and my husband of almost 20 years, and life was good. And my husband early one summer morning was arrested for possession of child pornography. And it was a total and complete shock, disaster, horror. And and my life stopped. I mean, I just had just everything I thought I knew, I didn't know. And I put my arms around my children and I did what was in front of me. But, and my husband very quickly, also it was in the newspaper and everywhere within about 24 hours. 'Cause my husband is a pretty well-known, director. And it was just, I still 4.5 years later can't quite put into words what that time was like. And a couple years, not even maybe a year and a half or so after that, as I was coming up for air, my husband went to rehab. My husband did not end up going to jail. And we are together. My family is together. And that's kind of the sexy, well, sexy is the wrong word, but the kind of interesting part of the story to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But the story that I felt really compelled to tell, I've never written before, but I felt truly like I had to tell the story of how I got knocked down onto the ground and got back up. All the other stuff is sensational, and I get that it's interesting because I would be interested if I weren't me. But really, I was so, so, so helped and supported by a few people specifically who reached out. One, a total stranger who just told me her story and said it was going to be okay, and I believed her, and that my children weren't going to be okay. And I wanted, at some point I said to her, how can I ever repay you? And she said, well, we'll just do this for someone else. And I thought, well, here's one way, not to even give anyone advice, but just to say, here's my story, because it's such a shameful, scary thing to talk about pornography, porn addiction, sex addiction, shame, what does it mean, all these things, and people just don't talk about it. But my story had already been in the newspaper. Everyone in my life and not in my life had read stories that were true, some stories that were very not true in places like the New York Post.
Yes.
And so I felt like I wanted to tell my story, but it was tricky because I did not want to tell my kids' story or even my husband's story. I wanted to tell my story. So the way I just came to me to create a show. I've always loved theater, and it's where I feel in some ways the most at home. So I created a one-woman solo piece called Accidentally Brave. And Kristen Hange, who I love, is directed it. And Daryl Roth, who I love and adore and admire, came up, saw a reading and decided to produce it within 24 hours of seeing a reading. And boom, it just happened. And people, to my surprise and delight, related to this story, even if nothing like this had ever happened to them, because thankfully it hasn't happened to most people, although you'd be shocked how many people it has happened to. But just that moment where your life falls out, mm-hmm. or that moment where you find out, you know, someone is sick or someone is cheating, or there's a car accident. Just many, many people have had times in their life where the bottom falls out and they don't know what to do. And so the feelings that I express in the show apparently are somewhat universal, even though the situation is so crazy and unique. So I did the play and had a really nice, exhausting 8 shows a week run at the DR2 here in New York. And about midway through the run, someone from Audible approached me and said, would you like to do the play as an audio? I guess it's an audio book, an audio play. Audible has a new division called Audible Theater, which is really exciting.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's really exciting because so many of these plays that we are so lucky that we get to see in New York, and gosh, half of them I miss because either I'm busy or I got to do something with my kids or I can't afford it.
Right.
What a great opportunity that Audible is producing a bunch of these where they record plays and they're available at Audible.
That's so, yeah, great, so because and because, you know, okay. Also, unless you go to the, you know, Performing Arts Library to watch a recording of something from the 80s, it's so sad with theater because it's live, but you can't really tape it, and because of the union, and, you know, so you're creating this beautiful art and then it's over on like a film.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and for this particular piece, I really did and do intend for it to be a kind of service. I don't in any way pretend to be any kind of therapist or minister or rabbi or anything like that. But I do know from personal experience that shared pain can be very healing. And so this way I have had people reach out to me because there were a lot of articles about the play when I was doing it. There was a piece in the New York Times and I was on The View, which was kind of traumatic. But the good thing about having the press, even though it was really hard, is that people heard the story. And even if they didn't see the play, I still get letters, emails, people reach out on Instagram and Facebook and tell me really, really, some really dark, harrowing, beautiful stories. And a lot of them have said, I can't get to your play, but I'd like to see it. I'd like to read it. So it's nice to be able to say, here's a link.
Great. Yeah.
You can listen. And it is being published in the, it's happening any minute now. Their DPS is publishing the play. And so it's nice because, it's nice because I'm proud of the piece, but really it's great to be able to say to someone here, because it's very hard to explain this situation in a seven minute interview. But I feel like I did a decent job in the play, and it was challenging to see if it would work without the visuals. We had a lot of, beautiful projections, photos and then just images. But I'm happy to say that people have reported that it really does work. People who didn't see the play, and I've had a couple of people who did see the play and then listened to it and said it really does translate.
So. And I'll put it in the show notes. I know our mutual wonderful friend Bob Marks, who was your vocal coach, said he didn't get to see the play, but he listened to it on Audible, and I'll make sure to include that. So when are you headed to LA with the show, so we can spread that word?
Yes, I am headed to LA with the show. I don't have the official dates yet, exact dates, but I will say, in fall 2020, I will be in Los Angeles doing Accidentally Brave.
Wow.
And
maybe a television series at the same time while you're out there, right?
Well, I mean, who knows? Who knows? I'm trying to just do today with my life. It's really, really helpful for me to just, you know, whatever today is, I just try to do Thursday. I just try to do Monday. But yes, that would be... That'd be great.
I think that's really wise advice. My last question is to share. I think in my book, certainly, and I think you and Jace are both quoted in my book, by the way.
Yes, we love your book.
Which is great. And I'll never forget when Jace brought your daughter Issa in for an audition for The Sitter, the Jonah Hill movie. And I was terrible because, you know, you never let a parent into the audition room. And of course, after her audition, I bring him in and I'm like, how's Maddie? And I'm giving him feedback on Issa. She's so great. And it's great to see you. I'm such a fan. And all the other parents looked at me, you know, when I opened the door, like, why are you know, who's he?
But it's like sometimes it's nice that we, you know, every other profession has a community, and sometimes it's frowned upon, but I think it's so nice. And I will tell your listeners that you have been a great friend before, during, and after a really difficult time. So, you know, the community of artists, and I certainly include casting directors, it's one of the most creative, important jobs. And some of my favorite casting directors have been actors or love actors. You'd think that goes without saying, but it doesn't.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's true.
There's been a real, you know, I didn't know, Jen, if I would work again. I really didn't. I know I didn't actually do anything, but it was a scary, it's a scary thing to come out with the truth of my story. And I've been incredibly supported by the New York theater community, the casting directors for film and television who continue to bring me in. And I am incredibly grateful because it was not necessarily going to go that way. And I feel incredibly grateful to people like you and other friends who we've worked hard together for decades, and I didn't want to lose that. You know, and I'm happy to report that I didn't, you know, maybe one or two, but I have stronger connections with people. You know, there's a spiritual element to getting through really, really, really hard times. And gratitude is something that I try to focus. I guess that's another thing I would tell actors and myself. Focus on what you have and not on what you've lost.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, the final, before we say goodbye to you, Maddie, just if you can share your, you know, epic audition success, you know, because we hear so much about the horrible auditions. So just share, like, just when you walked out of that audition room and thought, that was great, I'm going to get on with my day, and I'm very happy with my audition because ... what happened?
Okay, well, let's see. I am not someone who hates auditioning. I kind of like it, especially when there's a casting director who I love, who is willing to work and give feedback, and or a director in the room or another actor. But I'm going to tell a story of, just because this is kind of a nice story, because I keep talking about my mom, and maybe because you knew me at a time when my mom was around, so I feel very connected to you in that way. When I auditioned for Some Kind of Wonderful, it was, 1986 or something. Mm-hmm. And John Hughes movies were the biggest thing. You know, Molly Ringwald was it. I think she'd already been on the cover of Time magazine. And this was a big, big deal. So I auditioned for Some Kind of Wonderful. I went on tape, and which, you know, meant that I just went into the room and there really wasn't anybody there, except for the great casting director whose name Steve.
Oh, yeah. We'll look it up.
All right. Okay. Anyway, forgive my brain fog. So, and then I went on about my business as one does, and it was my junior year. I went to my junior prom, and I know this sounds crazy, but it's going somewhere, I promise. So it was my junior prom. I was doing the play you saw me in with Sherman. Mm-hmm. So it was at the American Jewish Theater, so there were no performances on Friday nights. So I was allowed to go to my junior prom because I didn't have a show that night. But I was not allowed to go to the beach the next day because we had a show the next night, Saturday night. So I go to the prom the 13th of June. I come, and my parents had a date that night. They went to see Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which was in the movies. And there was a preview for Some Kind of Wonderful. And my mother looks at my father and goes, I guess you didn't get it.
Oh, boy,
but the
yeah.
preview was just hands of a drummer. I guess they were supposed to be Mary Stuart Masterson's hands. And it said, coming next year, Some Kind of Wonderful. So they hadn't actually filmed any of the movie. But my parents are not showbiz people, and they didn't know. They thought if there's a preview, they made the movie, and our right. kid didn't get it. Even though I had only auditioned a week or so ago. So my mother had a stroke that night, early morning. That was the last night that she was ever at home. And she saw that movie and saw that preview. She went into the hospital the next day and stayed there for a couple weeks until she passed away. And I would go every day to the hospital. I mean, that's another time in my life that my whole world mm-hmm. fell apart and everything, the world just stopped. So I would be going back and forth to the hospital. And in those days, we had answering machines that you could access remotely. So I was checking our answering machine from the hospital payphone. There were no cell phones. And I don't even think we had pagers back then.
No, not then. Yeah.
We had this crazy thing that you would put up to the phone.
That's right. We had it too.
And then it would rewind the answering machine and you'd listen to your messages. and I got a message from Shirley Grant. Maybe I wasn't with Shirley Grant anymore. I'm conflating all my representation through the years, but I was young. I mean, I was 16, and the message said, we know that your mother's very sick, but if you can possibly get over to the Gulf and Western building,
that's right.
So I'm dating myself. You have a callback for Some Kind of Wonderful. And I was in shorts and a t-shirt. You know, I was not prepared. I didn't have whatever I would have. This is the good part of the story for auditioning. I was not prepared. I didn't pick out my outfit. I didn't really have a chance to study the script. I kind of remembered it from my first call, but I went. I went across town. I got in a taxi. I went up. I, again, went on tape. No director, no nothing, but it was a callback. I guess they had seen my mm-hmm. first tape and liked it, wanted another tape. I went back to the hospital, and my mother said, how did it go? And I told her, oh, I got it. They offered me the part right in the room. I just lied because she was dying, and why not tell her? And she was like, oh, that's so great. And then I kind of forgot about it because my mother died, you know, mm-hmm. and that was my life. And then a couple weeks after my mom died, they called and said, John Hughes would like to meet Maddie. And I was like, God, I've already gone in twice. What is this? And quite honestly, they were worried. They were worried that this 16-year-old girl who just lost her mom would not be able to still be funny and, you know, even maybe psychologically okay to go to L.A. and do this movie. So I went and met with John Hughes. I met with Martha Coolidge, who was the then director. She was later replaced. Right. And I did end up getting the movie. So I guess the moral of the story is just lie and say you got it, even though you didn't.
Right. Yeah.
The moral of the story is my second audition, I didn't even know was coming. I was in the middle of all this other stuff, and I just showed up.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be. I guess it was meant to be mine. I think sometimes things are meant to be yours and sometimes they're not. So that's my story.
Oh, it's beautiful, Maddie. Well, I know you've got a runoff. Speaking of auditions.
I have an audition.
You have an audition. And hopefully I will be able to see you soon. And thank you for sharing your stories. And
thanks for having me, Jen.
We will talk soon. Thanks.
All right. Give my love to your hubby.
Bye.
What an incredibly inspiring conversation with my friend Maddie Corman. Just keep on showing up to your auditions because you never know. Don't lose hope. For more episodes of Confessions of a Casting Director, please go to jenrudencasting.com/podcast. And if you love the show as much as I love doing it, please support us with a contribution so we can keep bringing you more episodes. You can find the contribution link on jenrudencasting.com/podcast or on the Anchor site. Thanks for listening.